How many of you guys watch the game? OH. Listen, we love being fans in this country, don't we? Especially this city. Don't we love being a fan? Yeah, absolutely. How many of you were a little uncomfortable yesterday? I've been uncomfortable all season. Every game I'm watching of the Buckeyes, I'm like, why can't we be good? What is the problem? We are the worst undefeated team I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, we're just like, no, it's uncomfortable watching the Buckeyes play, isn't it? Yeah, we're like, those of you that are fans, you understand that it's uncomfortable, man. Look, I want to play a little game. You guys like games? You ever played the game, Would You Rather? Okay, let's ask some questions here. I want to ask you the first question. Would you rather change your name to Hitler or never eat chocolate again? You think that's an easy question, don't you? But for those of us that like chocolate, Hitler, I don't know. Heil Hitler, you know what I'm saying? All right. Next question. Would you rather talk like Yoda or breathe like Darth Vader? Perplexed I am. All right. Number two, would you rather have your family, your entire family, read your entire internet history with nothing that everything has been deleted, back brought back on, or be secretly filmed at home alone with family, classmates, coworkers able to watch at any time? Tough decision. All right. Would you rather know the cause of your death or know the date of your death? Would you rather be stuck in a broken elevator for 12 hours or stuck on a broken ski lift for 12 hours? Ooh. I heard there was a movie about somebody got stuck on a ski lift and got eaten by wolves. I don't know what that was all about. Anyway, and last but not least, would you rather be stuck on an island with four people you can't stand? You know who you are. Or stuck on the island alone? Ooh. These are tough questions, aren't they? What's the common denominator of all these questions? They make you uncomfortable, right? It deals with your comfort. It's all about your comfort. And listen, in our society, let's be honest, man, we really stick a high value on comfort, don't we? That's a question. You can answer, please, people. You can talk back. That we stick a high value on comfort. You know, a couple years ago, my wife and I were at the Ohio State Fair with our kids, and we walk in, and as we walk in, we see I don't remember what, there's a mattress company, like the mattress firm or something, their big tent and all that kind of thing. And they're like, man, that's kind of cool. And so we did our thing. And at the end of the night, you know, you spend 14 hours at the fair, right? You know how it is. Because you're going to spend that kind of money, you're going to get your money's worth, right? That's just the way it is. And so all night, you're watching the fireworks, and then you see the tent, and you're tired, right? I know I am. So you go into, and they have it right at the exit, right? Pretty genius people. And you walk into this mattress tent, and you get on this mattress, and this guy's like selling you all the Cadillac of mattresses, right? You're like, yeah, and you're laying on this thing. I'm here rolling over, and he told me to roll back over, and when I rolled back over, my kids and my wife were looking like, you don't feel that? I was like, what are you talking? He slipped his cell phone underneath my back, and I had no idea it was there. I was like, this is my mattress. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, this thing was Mac Daddy comfortable to the price tag of $4,000. 4 G's. We sat there for 2 hours trying to convince ourselves why we needed to have this in our life. I'm not kidding. We sat there back and forth. Why would 4K and debt be great? Because it's going to improve my quality of life, right? We walked into the Ohio State Fair with like a $40 budget, ready to spend $4,000. Who does that? I mean, seriously. Who does that? Anyway, he took his number, and me and my wife were talking, and we're going out back. I'm like, man, how can we do this? We don't believe in debt, but man, this is it. If we were ever going to go in debt, this is what we're going to go into debt for. Because that mattress, I can't see. It's like the princess and the pea, that whole thing disappears, man. We're good, right? So we tried to convince all because of our comfort. We tried to convince ourselves that our comfort was worth starving our kids, right? Because they weren't going to be able to eat. Just all there was to it. We couldn't afford it. But I'd sleep well. That's right. I wouldn't lose any sleep over it. None. Kids coming all emaciated. I'm like, oh, this is wonderful. Go eat a twig off the tree, kid. Leave me alone. I mean, we spend billions and billions and billions of dollars on comfort. I mean, we can charge our cell phones, check our email, send texts. We can listen to music with voice commands. Our cars can run without gasoline, okay? We can press a button and have our tires magically fill up with air and get us another till we can get to the store. We know about comfort. You know what I mean? We do. We have plush leather seats. I mean, some of us, our cars are better than our houses, right? I mean, we know about comfort. Or, you know, you're lazy boys. Come on, man. You all have that chair, right? It's comfortable. Your wife wants to throw it away, but you're like, no, don't touch my chair. Don't touch it. But you know, that thing's hideous, but baby, that thing is comfortable, right? My dad still has the chair that me and him used to sit in. He still has it in the bay. Doesn't use it. It's got my little teeth mark in it. He won't throw it away. Won't get it because it's got my teeth in it. But it's comfortable. It's hideous, but it is comfortable, right? Or what about we got to have bigger TVs, right? Now we can have them curved and 4K and 3D. And I mean, basically you have the actors in your living room now. I mean, it's pretty cool. I mean, but it's all about comfort. I don't have to squint to see anything anymore. It's right there in life, real life. Or that we got Snuggies, right? Who doesn't love a good Snuggie? Don't admit that, gentlemen. Ladies, pajama jeans. I mean, come on. What gets more comfortable than jeans that look like pajamas? Or pajamas that look like jeans? I mean, come on. This is the greatest country in the world. Right? No, don't even get me started on Spanx. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we're all about comfort. All about it. We've even figured out how to turn steel into wool for our kitchens. You'll catch that later. Steel wool. Come on, people. Work with me. Maybe it's just not that funny. We even had shows, Dirty Jobs. Anybody seen Dirty Jobs? Man, they take the filthiest, most uncomfortable jobs. We sit there and we wince and we kind of watch it through our fingers like, I can't believe he's doing that. You know what I'm saying? Uncomfortable. But we watch shows. Anybody seen Naked and Afraid? Talk about uncomfortable. You naked in the middle of a desert. Nothing. That's uncomfortable. That's uncomfortable, man. And here, but my favorite of all times. Come on, you're going to have to agree with me here. I need somebody to participate. Comfort food. You might would know something about that, huh? You might would. We're talking about biscuits and gravy, right? Chili dogs, chili. I mean, comfort food. We are all about comfort. Us Americans, we love us some comfort, don't we? The problem is we are in danger because we love comfort too much. We love comfort too much. So much so that we have put so much emphasis on comfort that our faith has followed suit. We have put so much emphasis on comfort that our faith has followed suit. See, I mean, think about it this way. I mean, our Christians, we're accustomed to comfort. I mean, you come into a building like this, you sit on nice chairs, you eat great donuts and great coffee. You're in a warm environment in the winter, you're in a cool environment in the summer. I mean, the worst thing you got to do is you got to walk from your car to the door. And sometimes people won't even get out of bed to do that because it's too cold to go to church. Because I'm not comfortable. I'm not comfortable. I ain't getting out of bed today. I'm not comfortable. And our Bibles are even soft with leather and comfortable on our hands, aren't they? I mean, they're so much. We have them at our fingertips. I mean, we are all about comfort. And here's what happens. Before we know it, our chairs get padded. The messages are padded with easy teaching, and then our doctrine becomes lifeless, and we're left with a message of the Messiah that becomes a moral code of mush. It's comfort. It's all about comfort. Well, you don't judge me. Well, no, you can't do that. You can't tell me that. You can't. Well, I know the Bible says this, but does it really mean that? Or I we're good at justifying, aren't we? Let's be real. I've been there. I'm not stepping on toes. I do it myself. We're good at justifying. We're good at making ourselves comfortable. We're good at making ourselves, our faith comfortable. See, and here's what we've done is we've taken verses, it won't be up on your screen, but we've taken verses like Matthew 6:33. It says, seek ye first the kingdom of God. And then what? All these things will be added unto you. What's the emphasis we put on? Things. Well, if I just serve God enough, if I just read my Bible enough, if I just pray enough, if I just do this enough, then these things will be added to me. My comfort level in this life will increase if I will just serve him first. I'll get more stuff. You've seen that commercial about that girl buying the bed? Anybody seen that? She's like, I gotta buy more stuff. She buys this bed with drawers underneath it and drawers, and she gets all her stuff in it. She goes, ooh, now I can buy more stuff. That's how we are with our faith. It's like if we just serve God, then we get the things. If you look at the context of that verse, he's saying, no, no, no. If you seek me first, you won't have to worry about those things. You see, if you're looking at God, you won't have to worry about those things. You don't have to worry about your clothing, the Bible. Because if you worry about the clothes, the birds in the air don't care about what they eat. They don't care about what they wear. So why should you? Seek me first and I'll take care of you. That's what that's saying. It's not saying I'll give you more stuff. I'll make you more comfortable. Okay, because Luke 9:23, and here's where we're going to spend some time today. If anyone, say anyone, would come after me, meaning Jesus, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. Take up his cross daily and follow me. There's a lot of stuff in there that I don't like. I don't know about you. I'm not big at denying myself. Are you? Let's be real. I love me some me. You know what I'm saying? I love me some me. I do. I like taking care of me. I like having nice stuff. I like having nice shoes. I like having nice clothes. I like me some me. I want a $4,000 bed, and I'm trying to figure out how to get it. Right? Because I love me some me. I don't like denying. I don't like taking my cross up daily. It's just those aren't fun and exciting things. Those things make me uncomfortable. But so what do comfort craving fans do with something like the cross? What do we do with the cross? As Christ followers, what do we do with the cross? Because the cross is hard to avoid. The cross, it says he must deny me, take up his cross daily. What do we do with that phrase like take up your cross daily? How do we make that comfortable in our lives? Because fans will find a way to even make the cross comfortable. We'll find a way to make the cross comfortable. I mean, think about it. You ever heard we all have our crosses to bear, brother. Okay, let me see. Your car broke down and you have a cross to bear. I think you're taking it out of context. Just a little bit. Just my kids are going crazy. We all have our crosses to bear. That's not what the cross is. You're not taking it. That's life. It has nothing to do with following Christ. Because everybody goes through that stuff. Okay? We're talking about how we make the cross comfortable. The only time crosses make their annual appearance is Easter in churches. We've made it comfortable. It's on our churches. It's outside on our buildings. It's on our t-shirts. It's around our necks. We end up getting comfortable with the cross. We're getting acquainted with the cross. We're becoming anesthetized to the cross because we see it everywhere and we really don't understand the power of the cross. But again, what else are we supposed to do? I mean, you think about what the cross is a tough sell. It's a tough sell. Right? I mean, it's bad enough Jesus had to die on the cross, but he's asking us to go, and he insists that we have our own crosses to bear. We take up our own cross daily. So what do we kind of do? I mean, isn't that ruining Christianity's PR campaign? I mean, this isn't something the Chamber of Commerce starts out with. You know what I'm saying? Hey, take up your cross and die. What are you talking about? I don't want to die. That's just not how, I don't understand that. I mean, it really hinders our ability to recruit new people, doesn't it? I mean, let's start with the cross. That doesn't work. Hey, I know you love what you're doing, but you need to come die daily. You know, you need to deny yourself. Sound like a plan? Just sign right here. Who does that? It's hard. So we have to figure out how to get it to align with our lives and how, okay, well, we're comfortable. We like comfort. So how do we make the cross fit into our lives, right? How do we make the cross? How do we reconcile the cross with our creature comforts? How do we reconcile the cross with our daily day in day out lives? Because we want to put our best foot forward, don't we? I mean, we want people to come to Jesus, right? Christ follows. That's what we want, right? It's not a trick question. And so the cross that's supposed to be the point, having more people come to Jesus. So then we try our best to make Christianity sound as appealing as possible. And you can play this video. But what have we sacrificed in return?
Sometimes in an effort to get as many people as possible to follow Jesus, I have, with good intentions, made following him sound as attractive, as appealing as possible. And so I've talked a lot about the unconditional joy, the peace that passes understanding, the grace and mercy that that frees us from all of our guilt and shame. Those things are true and they are beautiful and they should be spoken of often. But I've realized that I have been guilty of selling Jesus. I've been emphasizing only the parts about Jesus that I thought people would like. Imagine it this way. Imagine if my oldest daughter grows up and goes to college, and after a number of years isn't married, but she really wants to be. And so I decide to help the process along. And I take out an ad in the newspaper, and I put up a billboard sign and print up t-shirts begging someone to come and choose her. Wouldn't that cheapen who she is? Wouldn't that make it seem like they were doing her a favor? I would never do that. If you want to come and get to know her, you better come with everything you've got, or I'll send you packing.
First Corinthians 1:18 says it like this: for the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those who are being saved, it is the power of God. See, here's the thing we need to understand about the cross, is that for those living in the first century, the cross was the ultimate example of weakness. The ultimate example of weakness. And it says here that the message of the gospel, the message of the cross, the gospel mean that a man would come down to earth and die and rise again so that we could have a relationship with God. The gospel truth, the message of the cross, is complete foolishness. Complete foolishness. It makes no sense. It makes no sense. And so you got to understand, I mean, ask yourself that question. Why would God use a symbol of torture, of death, and of weakness to save the world? Of all the things he could have chosen, why the cross? I mean, he could have chosen a sword. I mean, he's a lion. I mean, come on. I could serve a lion. I'm all about the lion. Let me tell you about my lion. I can walk with my lion daily. No, you got to pick up your cross. But I like the lion. The lion's cool. I mean, that's a cat I can embrace right there, guys. Let me just tell you. The only one. But that's a cat I can... But why would he use that symbol of torture to symbolize the world? Why? I mean, the cross seems more appealing to us right now because it's no longer used to execute people when we've dressed it up. See, that's not... His audience... When they saw the cross, it wasn't pretty, it wasn't pleasant, it wasn't comfortable. We see the cross as an ornament, hanging on somebody's wall, hanging from somebody's Christmas tree. We see it as a decoration, a piece of art. We see it as a piece of jewelry dangling on somebody's neck or in somebody's ear. That's what we see the cross at, and it's become comfortable. And the first century Jew, their reaction to our cross as a declaration would be horror. How could you possibly put that on your wall? How could you possibly wear that around your neck? How could you possibly have a t-shirt with Jesus hanging from the cross? How? How could you? It's the equivalent of taking a guillotine and hanging it around your neck. If you saw me wearing a guillotine necklace, you'd be like, dude, you are sick. You are twisted, wouldn't you? I mean, honestly. Or what if you saw me with ladies, you got electric chair earrings. I mean that's the equivalent of what the cross is to the first century Jew. It is just like wearing a guillotine around your neck or electric chair earrings. It's just like that. It's a symbol of torture. It's a symbol of punishment. It's a symbol of death and destruction. There's nothing pretty. There's nothing pleasant. There's nothing there's nothing comfortable about the cross. Everything it embodies is the exact opposite of what we have embraced it as today. It's uncomfortable. See, and that was God's point. That God's point is that it's a symbol of weakness. And that's what makes the cross so beautiful. It's that paradox. It's that in his weakness, in our weakness, he is strong. In Jesus' weakness, at that moment on the cross, God became strong. It was he chose what had no glory and what carried no honor. He found the least likely symbol for love and life, and he says, I'll use that. Of all the things, I'll use that. Because in my weakness, you were strong. Because in my weakness, you are strong. Jesus takes what the world says is foolish, demeaning, and shameful, and says, watch this. Watch this. And turns it into the power of salvation. Come on, that's good news, somebody. That's good news. That's good news. 1 Corinthians 1:22 says this. Jews demand signs and Greeks look for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. But to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than my human understanding, and the weakness of God is stronger than my human strength. In my weakness, he is strong. In my weakness, he is strong. Who else but God could take a cross that represented defeat and turn it into a symbol of victory? Who else but God to take the cross that represented guilt and turn it into the symbol of grace? Who else but God could take a cross that represented condemnation and turn it into a symbol of freedom? Who else but God could take the cross that represented death and turn it into a symbol of life? No one but him can do that. No one but him could do that. No one else but God can do that. That's the ultimate moment. That's the ultimate moment of God's weakness. It's the reality, that ultimate moment of God's strength. His weakness was his strength. His weakness was his strength, and he invites us to come and take up the cross daily. Take the cross daily. Now, let me ask you, you guys got to be asking a question by now. What does that matter? I mean, why, buddy? Why does this matter to my life? I don't understand what you're getting at. It doesn't make sense. Well, here's the thing I want you to understand is that what God did for the cross, he can do for you. What God did for the cross, he can do for you. He will do for you. See, when you are at your weakness, you are exactly where you need to be for God to be the strongest. See, that's the upside down truth of the cross, is that when you are weak, you are strong. 1 Corinthians 1:27 says, but God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. It's upside down. It's countercultural. It's a pyramid turned on its top. It doesn't make sense. It's the exact opposite of what the world teaches us. God didn't use the cross in spite of its weakness. He chose the cross because of its weakness. See, and you have to understand, that's why Paul says that God chose the weak things. And if you look at the Bible, if you read the Bible from front to cover, you'll see that the Bible is nothing but an example of imperfect people, weak people, who God did incredibly strong things through. It's all throughout it. The examples of the weak over the strong. Abraham was old. If you guys don't know who these characters are, Google it. Figure it out. Study it. Abraham was old. Jacob was insecure. Leah was unattractive. Joseph was humiliated. Moses stuttered. Gideon was poor. Samson was proud. Rahab was immoral. David had an affair, had somebody killed. Elijah was suicidal. Jeremiah was depressed. Jonah was disobedient. Naomi was a widow. John the Baptist was eccentric. Peter was impulsive and hot-tempered. Martha worried a lot. The Samaritan woman had several merit-filled marriages. Zacchaeus was unpopular. Thomas had doubts, I think. Paul had poor health. And Timothy was timid. I mean, throughout the Bible, we see people that are weak, inherently weak, crazily weak. People that he used that the society said, how can you use somebody like that? But he did it day in and day out. He flipped the script on humanity. The Bible is just a long list of imperfect misfits who discovered that weakness is strength. And when you figure that out, your life will change forever. When you figure that out, your life will change forever. So God, do for us what you did for the cross. It's backwards. It's upside down. It's countercultural. Strength equals weakness. Weakness equals strength. It's weird. It doesn't make sense. But when we acknowledge our weakness, we humble ourselves before the Lord, we put ourselves in a position to receive his strength. We put ourselves in a position to receive his strength. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9 through 10, it says, "But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect,'" and say it with me, "weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my," say it with me, "weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight," say it with me, "delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am, then I am strong." Doesn't make sense, does it? Let's be real. You read this, you're like, this doesn't make sense. Because society teaches us the exact opposite. You got to be strong. You got to keep your head up. Never let them see you sweat. You got to be strong. See, we don't naturally delight in our weaknesses, do we? And we actually go to great lengths to disguise our weaknesses. You don't believe me? Anybody ever been on a job interview? Yeah? What's one of the questions they ask you? What are your weaknesses? Don't you dare answer that question. If you want the job, you don't answer that question honestly, do you? I mean, seriously. So tell me, what's your greatness weakness? Well, you know, I'm never on time. I constantly procrastinate. I don't get along with anybody in the office ever. I'd much rather work alone. I do not work well with others, you know. And I this computer thing, I know I should be, but I don't even know how to turn one on, to be honest with you. You don't say that stuff, do you? You just don't do it because you can't. What do you say? Here's what we do. And there's whole books and classes. Trust, you guys have probably been to them. How to get through an interview, right? Here's what you say. So instead of admitting your weakness, you make your weaknesses sound more like strength. So rather, you say, "Well, I can be a little bit of a perfectionist sometime," right? Some of you are laughing because you know, right? Or "Man, I tend to be a bit of a workaholic," right? So you make a weakness sound like a strength because they're like, "Okay, so I'm going to have to rein you in from working too hard," right? Or, "Wow, you do your job too well." Right? We disguise our weaknesses. We just go around them. We avoid them. And it's set up to do that. It's funny story. This is random, has nothing to do with it, but I'm ADD, so let's go with it, okay? I was interviewing at one time, this was a long time ago, but it is now the largest church in the United States, and I was interviewing for a youth pastor position on the phone. It was a phone interview. Of course, that's why I was on the phone. And so they asked me a question. They said, "So what are your strengths?" And I listed like four or five of them, boom, 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 and one of them was funny. And the guy was a real jerk on the phone. If you're listening, I know who you are. And he's not. Anyway. So I listed my, I said, "One of my strengths is being funny." And he goes, "Oh, really?" He goes, "You know, make me laugh." I went, "What?" He goes, "I'm not in a good mood either. Go ahead and make me laugh." But he wasn't kidding. And neither was I. I was like, "Thanks for your time. Click. I don't want to work for you, jerk." You know what I mean? I mean, it was just one of the, anyway, sorry. Why did I say that? Strengths, weaknesses, interviews. There we go. I told you. I'll get back there. But why do we do that? Why do we hide our strengths? Why do we hide our weaknesses? Why do we disguise our weaknesses? It's because in our world and in our economy, weakness isn't strength. Strength is strength. Strength is strength. Weakness is not strength. Weakness is weakness. And you can't let anybody see a chink in your armor. You've got to be strong. You've got to cowboy up, cowgirl up, right? It's just the way it is. Because there's somebody waiting at the door to have your position. Show your weakness. I dare you. I got somebody over here I like better than you anyway. I'm ready to put in this position, right? Let's be real. So we cover our strength, we cover our weaknesses, and we try to work on our strengths. I mean, when I was at selling electricity in Texas, man, going door to door, 40 businesses a day, crazy, get my teeth kicked in, nuts. You know what they always said? They would say this: weakness is a sign of strength. That's what was their motto. Weakness is a sign of strength. And so what they're saying is, don't ever ever not ask a question because you're afraid you're going to look weak. Don't ever ask a question. If you've got a question, ask. Ask for help. Reach out. That was their motto every day. What do you need help with? Are you reaching out? You go through a slump. Hey, who'd you call? Did you call somebody? Because you could call this person. You could call that person. Ask them. You know what? They had the same situation. Ask them for help. And what they really meant was, yeah, you can ask for questions. But see, they always had these things called a dip. Well, everybody goes through a dip. In your career, in your life, every one of us goes through a dip at some point. It might last an hour, it might last 2 hours, it might last a couple weeks, whatever case, you go through a dip, right? And so they would always say, it's okay to go through the dip. What they really meant was, it's okay to go through a dip, but get your mind right. Don't stay here too long because you can't be weak for too long. That's what my company meant. So then you stopped asking for help because if you were asking the same question too many times, then they would get rid of you because you obviously weren't getting it because you were too weak. Does that make sense? They didn't really mean it. They really meant, as long as you're getting stronger, then we'll keep you on board. But as soon as you show signs of weakness and you continue to show signs of weakness, we're getting rid of you. So I learned how to master my weakness. I learned how to hide. I learned how to ask questions even when I really didn't want to ask questions, right? I learned how to hide some things. I mean, we've got to make our strength stronger and we've got to make our weaknesses stronger. That's how we roll. And if you don't, what do? You staff your weaknesses, right, people? You staff them. If you're weak, you staff your weakness. So it's all about getting strength around you so that you don't have weakness. That's how we've developed our lives. And that's what God is saying. God's saying, no, you're weak. You're weak. You're powerless, matter of fact. But I'm going to help you because in your weakness, I am strong. We've got self-help books published around this every year that communicate one message. What's that? You can do it, right? Little water boy flashback for you. You can do it. You have what it takes, right? Just look deep within yourself and find the strength. You can do it. But the truth is, Paul says, strength comes when you realize your weakness. Strength comes when you realize your weakness. That's not what the world says. That's countercultural. That's not right. It's like this. When Caden and Kai, my sons, I got actually my oldest, crazy, turns 11 this week. How nuts is that? Anyway, he's 11. Kai's 8. And when we would go on a trip, they had these clear backpacks that they used to load up with their toys. Like, you know, we put the little leash on them when we walk through the airport. You know what I'm talking about? And we'd have the leash on their clear backpack, and they'd be going through the airport doing their thing. Or you'd watch them, like, or when we're carrying in groceries, they always wanted to carry the heaviest bag they can, right? They even do that now, right? They pick up the strongest. Look, Dad, I'm strong. Feel my muscles, right? I mean, you know, you guys, you've all done that. And you feel them and you pump them up. Wow, you're so strong. Oh, my goodness. Wow. You've been eating your spinach there, big guy, right? I mean, you pump them up. And I remember, you know, on trips, they'd be wearing their backpacks and all strong and everything else. And a couple hours into it, what would they do? They'd be walking along and they'd just kind of get heavy and they just kind of drop it and look up, right? What happens, Mom and Dad? You're carrying the backpack, aren't you? The one thing that you said, don't take that with you because I know I'm going to end up carrying it, right? You end up carrying it. Self-fulfilling prophecies. And you carry the backpack. And as you're carrying the backpack, a couple hours later, they're walking. It's been a long day. What do? They look up at you. Up. Right? Right? And before you know it, the things that they were carrying, not only was I carrying their weight, I was carrying them. Not only was I carrying their weight, I was carrying them. See, in their weakness, I was strong. In their weakness, I was strong. And I want to learn a lesson from my son. I want to learn a lesson. I want to admit my weakness. I want to be at a point where I can ask God to show his strength in my life. Lord, do for me what you did for the cross. Do for me what you did for the cross. It's part of my pride that I won't carry I want to carry my own load, isn't it? It's my pride. And I'm going to do it myself. I'm going to make it happen myself. Because that's what I have to do. That's what society has taught me. That's pride. That's ego. That's arrogance. That's the exact opposite of what God is saying. That's the exact opposite of what Paul wrote. But the cross makes it clear that when I am weak, he is strong.